If folks can take their conversations back outside and council members come to the table, Mr. Hansen, Mr. Alexander. Ow. Thank you for that, Dr. O'Keefe. So up next, agenda item is our Habitat Committee report, and I will turn it over to Chair Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps I should fetch an air horn for next council meeting. So we had a Habitat AP meeting on May 29th and a follow-up Habitat Committee meeting on June 12th. Within those two meetings, we discussed various topics, including EFH, wind update, the clam dredge report, and then also the review of the dedicated habitat research areas, the DHRAs, and what we're going to do about those. And so for today, Michelle is going to go and cover the topics of the clam dredge discussion and also the DHRA, and Julian will provide an update of where we are currently right now with our EFH second framework dealing with those topics. I will have two committee motions to move forward and then a third motion to move forward on DHRA. So I will turn it over to Julian.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that. Good morning, council members. So as Melissa said, we're I'll be kicking this off with the Essential Fish Habitat 2026 progress update. And so then I'll hand it over to Michelle for the surf clam dredge exemption program review and the DHRA discussions. Oops. This year we are, as you all know, we are continuing our kind of suite of updates for updating essential fish habitat designations. We are finishing all of the remaining groundfish species, including the small mesh species, as well as scallops. So this spring, the PDT and modeling contractor have been hard at work updating the maps and texts for those species based on species distribution modeling and non-modeled inshore survey data and environmental data, as well as literature reviews. We're currently reviewing the draft designations with PDTs, APs, and fishery experts, and we'll continue to seek feedback on those. And we anticipate a final review with the Habitat AP and Committee in August or September, and then the council will take final action in September. So hopefully you're not sick and tired of this flowchart, but this just, again, summarizes the overall process. And so for most of our species, we're currently in that step three, the feedback and engagement step. And then there's a few species, which I'll note on the next slide, which are at the kind of running the SDMs and drafting the maps and text. And so for most of our species, as a reminder, these are the EFH maps are based on the outputs of joint hurdle species distribution models. And so for most of those, they are getting separate juvenile and adult maps with a few species, namely halibut, getting a pooled map. And that's mainly based on data availability. In the council binder, pollock is currently depicted as pooled, but as the PDT has been working through that designation update, we've been looking at separating those just based on distinct habitat use by juvenile and adult stages. Scallops is getting a its own model, which is a single index integrated model, and that kind of integrates dredge and trawl data. And then wolfish and offshore hake are getting relatively simplified models due to the kind of data limitations and unique data circumstances of those species. So this is an example of an updated designation map for yellowtail flounder with juveniles on the left and adults on the right. And then here's an example of an updated text description. And so this highlights kind of some of the key points, key information that we're trying to include in all of these, including the size breaks for juveniles and adults, a description of the geographic range from the map that was previously shown. We talk about inshore and offshore habitat characteristics, including depth, temperature, and salinity ranges, and then any other life history information that may be relevant for how the species or life stage uses habitat. So that could be things like seasonal movements or spawning activity or other migrations. And I guess I'll also mention that other examples of the draft maps are in the council binder. For feedback and engagement, we're using a similar process as last year's framework. We've put together what we're calling species EFH primers. These are relatively short documents that include discussion questions as well as maps, the draft maps and text for each life stage. And we have other products that we can share as they become relevant. In particular, you might remember the R Shiny EFH demo app that we showed last year. That's currently in progress of being updated with the 2026 species, but that is a very helpful tool for exploring some of these designations, zooming in on maps, and seeing how the kind of different data inputs come together to form the draft designations. For feedback and engagement, we're starting with species PDTs and AP members. And we found last year that meeting in individually with folks or in small groups was kind of the most effective for having these conversations about habitat, as well as getting feedback via correspondence. And for groundfish specifically, just because there's we're updating about 12 species, we've broken that up into three different groups just to leverage availability and expertise of PDT members and stock assessment scientists. And so here are the discussion questions that we've included and sent around for review with these groups. And these questions really aim at identifying gaps in either the maps or in the text descriptions or in information sources. So that could be other data sets to verify against or other individuals to have conversations with, and really trying to expand the net kind of network of information that we're drawing upon. And so some things to highlight with this process is that we don't really plan to make major changes to modeling inputs or methods at this point. That's kind of something more for the next EFH review. But we can consider kind of more ad hoc adjustments to maps if they're well supported. So we're trying to be relatively consistent in the process across all species, but we also recognize that there are species-specific nuances to habitat use. And we're also, based on some feedback we've already received, we're exploring methods to kind of ground truth with commercial catch data for some of these maps. Oops. And so just to review kind of the timing a little bit, for most of our species, maps and text are ready for feedback and have already been sent out to the relevant groups. A few species that I've noted are there's still some work being done to finalize those SDMs and modeling outputs before we're ready to share them with others. But and then we've had, as the chair noted, we've had a few PDT, AP, and committee meetings on this as well. And so for today's discussion, we're really seeking feedback from the council on if you have any questions on the development process or the methods, or if you have any specific suggestions for folks that we should talk to, and if you have any specific comments on the designations as the draft designations as they are right now. And so I will hand this off to Michelle, because I believe we'll be going through all of the agenda items and then taking questions and discussion on everything at the end.
Great. Thank you, Julian, for that. So I'm going to talk first about our program review of our surf clam dredge exemption in the Great South Channel Habitat Management Area. This is a review that you requested in December as a work item for this year. The purpose is to evaluate the fishery that's been occurring for about the last 6 years in the three dredge exemption areas in the Great South Channel Habitat Management Area. That's an area we designated through the Omnibus Habitat Amendment, which was implemented in 2018. We want to consider both fishery performance in the areas and also the habitat conservation performance of the program, and plan to provide a report to you in September, and that'll allow you to think through kind of how this program is going and think towards if future changes are needed and on what time frame, and that I think should inform a priorities discussion later in the calendar year. So as we think about this review, this is what I would consider to be within the scope or beyond the scope of the review. The objective, as noted on the last slide, is really to think about the effectiveness of the exemption program, thinking about it from a habitat point of view and also a fishery point of view, surf clam fishery point of view. We reviewed quite a lot of information in the underlying clam dredge framework, and obviously since we completed that work in December of 2018, there's been some new science, and we have new distribution models, we have new information about the marine environment and some of the other species, and then we obviously have fishery information. So I'll talk about those different sources in a bit, but the focus would be on kind of what do we know differently now. We're not going to explicitly think about how the research areas are working, if we should have different research areas, if we should kind of be setting up that aspect of our management of the habitat management area in a different way. But we know that there's been a lot of work done in those two areas, and we're certainly going to use the results of those research and kind of extrapolate from those and use those to infer about the three exemption areas. So this especially will include research done under EFPs by Kuna Messett Farm Foundation, and we're looking forward to getting the final report of their current project hopefully at the end of next month. So just at a high level, the way I'm thinking about the discussion questions that can guide our review is on the habitat and managed resource side, is the program minimizing to the extent practicable the effects of fishing on our essential fish habitats within the Great South Channel HMA? And then on the fishery side, we talked in the problem statement for the framework about surf clam optimum yield, and I think that's how it makes sense to me to frame this question. So are we, through the exemption program, creating fishing opportunities and supporting achievement of optimum yield in the surf clam fishery, and to what extent or not? So just thinking first about the types of information we might be considering related to habitat and our managed species, and then again, if there's things that you think are missing off this list, would love to hear them, and we can see what else we could integrate potentially. So in terms of habitat conditions, these are things that got some treatment in the framework, and what do we know differently now? But looking at depth, sediment, natural disturbance is obviously really important in this area. It is a highly dynamic habitat relative to other parts of the region. Currents of epifauna, temperatures at the surface, the bottom, how those have maybe changed through time, We have, you know, various sources of data we can use for that. We do have, you know, Julian just spoke about our EFH work related to these species distribution models. We can apply them in other contexts. We can, you know, drill into some of that EFH information here and think about the species that overlap this area and their distribution within the area and what environmental factors are governing that distribution and how they relate to the conditions in the HMA. And how we can say something, I think, about how that's changing through time. We have the tools to do that. Generally, most of the species distribution models do have this time component. Cod spawning was a big point of discussion as we developed the framework. And, you know, we had some fishery ecological knowledge that we brought to bear and that identified past spawning grounds. At least not within the area, but adjacent to the area, there has more recently been some acoustic work. And then we also could look at, say, environmental conditions and think about whether those are supportive or not of cod spawning in the winter season in this area. We have updated estimates of fishing disturbance from our fishing effects model, and we can look at those for this area. And then also we can, there haven't been, unfortunately, updated surf claim resource surveys. This is an area that isn't covered by the federal survey, but there was a dedicated survey in this area about 10 years ago, and following completion of the framework, there were some papers published based on that survey, so we'll certainly read through those. On the surf clam fishery side, we already have pulled for us some data on efforts, effort landings, revenues in the fishery. That's data generally comes from CAMS, but it can be, because this is a, you know, pretty fine scale spatial arrangement of exemption in closed areas, we need to look at, we have the 5-minute polling rate for the VMS data, and we can join up the data from CAMS. Well, staff at the regional office join up data from CAMS with the VMS data to estimate which exemption areas effort was associated with. So we have that information. Seems helpful to think about, you know, how many vessels and kind of where they're landing their catch and where they're based. And we can divide, I don't know, just, you know, based on some of the confidentiality issues associated with these data, how fine scale we'll be able to report these exactly, but we can certainly do some aggregation into the 2020 to 2026, the current period post-implementation of the program. We have this period where the area was entirely closed for about a year or maybe 14 months, and then we have the pre-implementation timeframe, so we can make some comparisons there. And then we'll put this in the context of just the overall trends in the fishery. We obviously work closely with Mid-Atlantic Council staff, and they're about to update the fishery performance report for 2026, so we should have that at some point early next month. They have an advisory panel meeting scheduled. And then we got a lot of useful comments from surf clam industry about their operations in this area, so there's already, I think, some details we can glean from some of those comments, and we can certainly follow up with industry members as needed, as we have questions about what they've already provided. So the committee made a consensus statement. The advisory panel had a series of specific recommendations for different elements to consider and kind of how to frame them and kind of focus on different elements during this review. And so the committee's statement was supportive of including those recommendations and kind of recognized that we would want some flexibility to include other information that we may identify, and given just, you know, kind of time constraints and really wanting to have a report drafted for the September discussion, we can focus the work as needed, you know, just based on the resources available. So some highlights of the committee's discussion, I think they agreed that the point of this review is really to kind of scope out what's going on and support a council priorities discussion, that there's lots of, maybe not lots, but there's other work or deep levels of detail that we could go into in developing a future action, and that's not what this is intended to be. It's really just intended to give you a sense of taking stock of the program. And the committee was really encouraging of collaborating with both industry and scientists who worked in this area and may have information that can inform the development of our report. And so we plan to do that. And these are just the details of that advisory panel recommendation on the scope of the report and the information to consider. Many of these are things we're already thinking about. I think the framing is maybe a little bit different than how the plan development team and the the draft outline would have presented them, but I think these are all themes that would have been in our review. So you can read these details here. So again, just thinking ahead to, you know, once we get through the research area slides and we can discuss this, would ask you to consider the scope as presented today and the information that we're going to be using. And if there's anything else you think we should be considering, or anyone you know, think we should be talking to, and then we'll provide this in September. And certainly as we present that report in September, if there's some additional things or questions or things you would like us to follow up on or further develop, I think, you know, to a limited extent, we could consider that as within the tasking for this year. And if it's something really major, then that probably belongs in a future council action. Okay. Switching gears, the last major topic for today is to talk about this three-year sunset review of our two dedicated habitat research areas that were designated through the Omnibus Habitat Amendment. We have some other research areas. I just mentioned the ones in the Great South Channel Habitat Management Area. We also have a coral research area out in Jordan Basin, but those that are subject to the sunset provision in our regulations are the Stellwagen DHRA, which is in a Western Gulf of Maine region overlapping part of Stellwagen Bank. You can see that in purple here, and then the Georges Bank DHRA, which is shown in green. The regulations and the Habitat Amendment request or require the council to provide a recommendation to the regional administrator, and then it doesn't require additional council action to remove a designation. That's something that the regional office could do administratively. And generally, the criteria, which I'll go through in some more detail, are related to whether research has occurred or is planned to occur, that research that specifically addresses the objectives we had in the Habitat Amendment. So for today, you've got a report from the regional office. They asked about federally reviewed, permitted or authorized activities, and they compiled all of that information into a summary for us. So thank you to them. The plan development team also provided some recommendations, as did the advisory panel and the committee. So just what is a research dedicated habitat research area? Hopefully this is familiar to you, but it's essentially combining a location that's explicitly bounded with specific coordinates where certain fishing activities are restricted. And the point of restricting those activities is to create kind of controlled conditions where research on these topics could be conducted. And so the research topics are more fully outlined in the Habitat Amendment EIS or in the materials for this meeting. At the very end of that memo, there's GARFO enclosed the 2022 memo that has the full wording of the questions. But essentially, as we were coming out of the Habitat Amendment, we were realizing, you know, there's limitations to our fishing effects modeling work just because of some uncertainty about some inputs. And so we have a number of questions about ways we could kind of refine that work and further specify, more clearly specify those inputs. And then we also generally want to improve our understanding of how habitats support the species that we manage. And for the Georges Bank DHRA specifically, we were curious about the relationships between scallop distribution, abundance growth, and seabed type. That's a sort of detail that wasn't in the rationale for the Stellwagen area. These two DHRAs have different fishing activities that are prohibited within them. So some, that top row of the table is what are the restrictions associated with the research area regulations specifically. So the Stellwagen DHRA is a little broader. Any bottom tending gear other than the gears that the council really doesn't manage, like lobster traps. Recreational gears are allowed. And then on the Georges Bank DHRA, the restriction with the DHRA designation itself is just bottom trawls and dredges. We have a number of overlapping management areas in the Western Gulf of Maine that confer fishing restrictions. There's a habitat closure and a groundfish closure. Those are longstanding areas, as I think people are aware. And then on Georges Bank, really the only overlapping management area is a paralytic shellfish poison enclosure area. Which so in the immediate term, if we were to sunset the Georges Bank DHRA, you would be able to then fish with a scallop dredge or with a trawl. You couldn't immediately fish with a clam dredge, but longer term, I think that program is liable to change, and you would be able to fish in there, provided that you're following a testing protocol for your shellfish. The Stellwagen DHRA, if the DHRA sunsets, practically speaking, there's no change in the fishing restrictions that are allowed because of those two other areas that have similar restrictions. And so this is just a graphical representation of how the DHRA, which is the bottom hatched area, overlaps the Western Gulf of Maine closure and habitat closure, which have the same boundaries and are larger and extend further to the north on Jeffrey's Ledge. As a reminder, we do have a shrimp trawl exemption area in the northwestern corner, kind of the deeper areas off west of Jeffrey's Ledge. Hasn't really been used just because of the status of the shrimp fishery. But these areas have different objectives and then different gear restrictions that in some cases are similar but are designed to address the objectives. With the research area being, the purpose is to facilitate coordinated research on gear impacts and the other topics that I discussed. Habitat management area, the purpose is to minimize the impacts of fishing on essential fish habitats to the extent practicable. And then the purpose of the groundfish closure is to promote rebuilding and prevent overfishing on various groundfish resources. The sunset provision, as the council talked about it during development of the habitat amendment, there was a recognition that the council has the authority to designate a DHRA, enact fishing restrictions, but that the council isn't a research organization itself. We don't generally fund research. We don't do the research in the field. And so the DHRA designation is designed to be supportive, but there's things here that aren't fully within the council's control, and didn't want to see a situation where we had research areas designated and fishing was restricted, but then the area wasn't being used. And so that's kind of how this sunset provision came about. Something that came up in some of our discussions at recent meetings was that whether or not if a DHRA were to be sunset and removed, would that kind of affect our overall sense of the extent to which we're minimizing impacts of fishing gear on EFH? And we generally wouldn't count these DHRA associated restrictions towards that minimization of adverse effects, because we recognized in the development of the habitat amendment and the EIS document that these could be temporary areas, and so we sort of weren't counting those in that context. The impacts that we estimated in the EIS were more about kind of the related to the benefits of the research that might occur. Another flowchart. Julian and I really like flowcharts. So this is kind of how you could think about the sunset provision, kind of working through that and asking questions. Is there active research? If there is it expected to continue? And then you would maintain the DHRA. There's not active research. Is there anything planned? If not, it's a case to sunset. If there is something planned and the restrictions associated with the DHRA that are creating that controlled condition are important to that planned work, then you would keep your DHRA. If there's nothing planned, or if the research restriction, the fishing restrictions really aren't important, then you could consider sunsetting it. So I think the two DHRAs we have kind of rather neatly sort into keep or remove per the flowchart. The Stellwagen DHRA has been actively used in the past. There's some ongoing work, and there's some future plans for work that are related to the questions we had in the habitat amendment and are reliant on creating that controlled environment through the DHRA regulations. The Georges Bank DHRA, in this review and in the prior review, I guess 4 years at this point, recent or planned work related to the research questions. So I would suggest that removal is appropriate. This is just a list of some of the research that's related to the DHRA objectives. You can find these kind of more fully explained in the memo from the regional office, and there's some description in the PDT's memo as well. But things like comparing natural disturbance and species presence across habitat types inside and outside, There are plans to continue this work subject to available funding and vessel time. There's some acoustic monitoring that's been ongoing. I think that's a Sank Sound program. They have a great website if you're interested in some of their findings. I was looking at it yesterday. And then there was an environmental DNA study that looked at biodiversity inside and outside the area. And I think we might have the link to that in the PDT memo. If not, it's relatively easy to Google and find it. And then in the future, there's a couple things that they're looking at doing, autonomous underwater vehicle surveys to look at habitat quality and species composition inside and outside the Stellwagen DHRA, and then also looking at an economic analysis of fishing and ecotourism opportunities inside and outside, and thinking about if the research area and the other, you know, long-term closures that overlap it are creating a spillover benefit to outside areas. So the committee recommended sunsetting the Georges Bank DHRA and recommended thinking about the dependence of the research that's proposed and ongoing in the Stellwagen DHRA on those DHRA regulations. So the Georges Bank recommendation, I think, was quite straightforward, just to recommend that the council request removal of the DHRA on Georges Bank. And so you'll see that motion. And then in terms of Stellwagen, the committee requests that we complete a dependence analysis, thinking about the Stellwagen dedicated research area kind of work that's ongoing and what the regulations are before the council discusses the issue. And just to note, the PDT's recommendations are a little bit different. The plan development team suggested retaining the Stellwagen DHRA, and just had a note that the management regime on the Georges Bank DHRA has been in place for quite a long time. So if the council does agree with the AP and the committee recommendation to remove it, just to kind of bear that in mind. So in terms of this dependence question, I think if you know, going through that flowchart, are the fishing restrictions associated with the DHRA an explicit part of the design of the project? If you think about those projects, I think we can answer yes to this question. I think another point is that through our omnibus habitat amendment development, we talked about the groundfish and habitat and research area designations as overlapping but separate, and they had different objectives. So, you know, I would consider that we should think of them as separate designations at this point in time, as well as we're evaluating the DHRA for sunset. As I was thinking about the regulations associated with the overlapping habitat and groundfish closures, you need both of them combined to provide the same restrictions as the DHRA, just the way that they're individually established. The groundfish area, for example, has an exemption for clam dredging. It's an exempted gear in our groundfish plan because the bycatch of finfish is very minimal. But other DHRA restrictions are met through that groundfish area. The habitat area is just restricting bottom trawls and dredges, but as you recall from the earlier slide, we restrict bottom long lines and sink gill nets in the DHRA as well. And just a reminder that we do intend to have a fuller review of our spatial management areas at some point in the future. The habitat amendment laid that out on a 10-year schedule, which would put us in around 2028. To do a more comprehensive review and thinking about all those overlapping areas. Really what we're able to do through the DHRA regulations is keep a DHRA or sunset it. I don't think the council granted the administrative authority to adjust any of the measures in the DHRA. So for today, recommend whether to sunset the Georges Bank DHRA, which would be consistent with the recommendations of the Habitat Committee, and recommend whether or not to sunset or keep the Stellwagen DHRA, just given the discussion that we've had. So I'm happy to take questions about that topic, or, you know, if we have questions going back to the earlier sections of the presentation on EFH or the clam exemption program as well. And then we have some motions. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Bachman. Thank you, Mr. Garrison. To the council, obviously there was a couple different things, the EFH input, the clam exemption program review input, and some recommendations to DRHA for the two areas. So I will go to Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, I just want to step back to the clam dredge exemption program review and the fishing effects model. Talks about evaluating disturbance. I was just curious what the evaluation of disturbance actually is. Is everything considered negative? Because there's been lots of literature going around recently touting the positive effects of disturbance. So just want to clarify that if you could.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Eric. So the fishing effects model estimates the percent disturbance of a 5x5 kilometer area of seafloor, like out of 100%, and looks at how that changes through time and could potentially recover if the disturbance ceases, or could be kind of maintained or increase if fishing effort disturbance would increase. And that's based, the estimates are conditioned by the habitat types that are estimated to occur in the area. It is, I guess, one-sided evaluation, assuming that disturbance is negative and it doesn't account for positive impacts of fishing. We did obviously receive the literature that was shared with the council as correspondence. I think we can take a fresh look at some of that information and consider how to talk about it in the context of disturbance. And, you know, I also will be looking at some of the information coming out of the research areas about, you know, you have natural disturbance and fishing disturbance and how those interact in these areas and kind of what the conditions look like as you don't have fishing, and or, you know, if you've controlled areas where you don't have any fishing, and kind of how natural disturbance plays out and is affecting the seafloor as well. So I think all of that will be part of it. And we can certainly caveat again if people aren't aware that what the fishing effects model is doing, but we're not going to sort of reconfigure that approach for this, but hopefully we can describe what it is and what it's not considering so that you're clear on that.
Okay, I think it's important to, you know, reevaluate the fishing effects model. This is a review of the clam dredge, but I also realize that scallop dredges disturb the bottom, and scallop resource usually comes back to the same places. It's not destroyed habitat. It's habitat that's enhanced. So the historic fishing kind of dictates that disturbances aren't all bad. And I think the fishing effects model really needs to be reviewed.
A quick follow-up on that is that the fishing effects model does consider the amount of disturbance, and the like intensity of fishing is very influential on the estimates that it produces. And just something else to note, I think that we can think about, we have sort of standard approaches to estimating like fishing time associated with a fishing trip, and kind of scaling that up to the scale of the fishery in different areas. And through the work that Coonamessett Farm Foundation has done in these areas, we, I think, can be more precise about our estimates of the bottom contact associated with these fishing events, and we can, you know, talk about our fishing effects model results in that context.
Thank you for that. Mr. Smith and then Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Michelle. Thanks for their presentation. I had a question for you on one of your last slides regarding the dependence review that was requested by the committee motion regarding Stellwagen. At the committee meeting, I had questions about what that dependence review actually was and what was included in it. Is the slide that you presented, I think it's number 29, is that the dependence review that the committee asked to be done, so that's been done and we can press on?
Yeah, I struggled a little bit with what we could provide here. I think it's, you know, I think we provided this before the committee meeting, but just underscored it, this presentation, that there are research projects that are planned that are dependent on the DHRA restrictions. I think the other thing to, you know, keep in mind is that's maybe the point is made a little more finely for this presentation is that we have these different objectives associated with the different management areas. And so I think the, you know, the work that's happening in the Stellwagen DHRA is kind of consistent with the council's objectives for that area. And, you know, also the specific overlapping fishing regulations associated with other areas, you need, you know, both the groundfish and the habitat area to backstop the regulations for the DHRA. So I think there's like a little bit of kind of finer points made in this update to the council as compared to the way we talked about it at the committee. Not a ton of new information, just kind of a way of doing it and just reminding ourselves where we've been in the past. So this is, I think, what we could provide on this question, unless there's something else specific that you're looking for that we could consider. This is, I think, where I would stop an evaluation of the issue.
That sounds good to me. That's what I was anticipating, and I just appreciate the work that the PDT completed between the committee meeting last week and now to give us this information. So thanks for that.
Thank you for that. Mr. Pitney, go ahead.
Thanks. I realize you're just looking for questions for staff, but just sort of as a follow-on to maybe Jeff's question, you know, related to this dependence analysis, I think one of the points that, you know, we're thinking about is typically these things come in, these projects come in, request exempted fishing permits. And when we review an exempted fishing permit application, we're looking at, well, what's the purpose of the project and what are the underlying objectives of the area in which they want to fish? And so if you have a DHRA that they want to do a gear related study, then that's obviously consistent with the council's intent of that area. If you take the DHRA away, what you're left with is an area that prohibits bottom tending mobile gear and overlaid an area that prohibits, you know, groundfish fishing. And so someone who wants to do it, wants an EFP to do work in that area, it would be much harder to sort of understand that it's consistent with the intent of the count, you know, the council's intent for those areas. So I think the DHRA layered on top of that provides a mechanism by which we can more easily review and approve requests for EFPs.
Thank you for that, Mr. Pitney. Ms. O'Dell, and then Mr. Lucy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I was going to ask a question about the dependence review and the additional work done by the PDT, but Jeff just asked it, so I don't have to ask that. So thank you, PDT and Michelle, for following through and adding that slide so we had it clear, and Mr. Pitney as well for providing that clarification on the overlay of the designated habitat research area on that closure area. So I just quickly wanted to add for the essential fish habitat next steps and review. First, I wouldn't exclude inshore vessels from providing input on haddock and pollock. It's not just the offshore fleet that catches those stocks at times of the year. I also would just add for the fishermen that are in the room, and I know we talked about this at the committee, just really being mindful of the maps that you're showing to the industry for feedback. So, you know, we have our analytical essential fish habitat maps, but when going out to the industry, it's much better to have a nautical map or some form of something that they can relate more to, so that they have coordinates and they know kind of depths and can kind of put themselves in that place and think about their fishing, what they see. So those are my two inputs to that. Thanks.
Thank you for that. Up next, Mr. Lucy, and then I'll go to Mr. Pierdnock.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So just for my education, how long has the Georges Bank DHRA been in effect? What year did that go in?
Yeah, so as a dedicated habitat research area, it went into effect in April of 2018. But the area was previously part of a groundfish closure and a habitat closure, and those went into effect in 1994 and I think 2003. So it's been managed for a long time, but it's only been a DHRA for the last 8 years. Is my math right? Yeah.
Okay, but in effect, it's been a DHRA because of the management measures. I mean, not officially, but it's been.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big point, and this goes to Mr. Pitney's comment, I think a DHRA designation is about kind of the council wanting to create a focused area for research and to send people to a specific place to do specific work. So, you know, it's the regulations are there that are creating those controlled conditions where fishing is, many types of fishing are absent, but we're not seeing the research that we were hoping to see in that area. So,
okay. And then just the last part. So the original intent of setting it up in 2018 was what?
To create to maintain, I guess, a controlled space where you could do research on gear effects without having other fishing in the background. So if you were trying to test something like the sort of seafloor disturbance or the, you know, contact of different gears or any of those things that would help us refine our fishing effects model, a place where you don't have fishing is a good place to do that. We also talked about the area as a place where there's, you know, not naturally like large abundances of scallops. And right now there's basically no scallops, but where you might do some seeding work, I think have been done in the past, and where you might, you know, do experiments like that and in the absence of fishing and see about, you know, growth and things. And that just hasn't kind of played out the way we would have hoped, but that was part of the original rationale.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Mr. Pierdock, then Mr. Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Michelle, for your presentation. I just need some clarity, you know, looking at the flow chart of how it's then concluded that George's Bank, there's no research going on within that area. The clarity that I need is that the ongoing fall and spring surveys that are conducted provide data and information associated with the different species of concern, such as the changes in the spatial distribution and extent of cod, herring, and you know, the shifting stocks that we now have moving farther north into this area, the southerly stocks moving farther north. So does that fall within this purview, that that's research that is ongoing and being conducted that then would change the outcome of that decision flow chart? Just trying to get some clarity if that is or is not the case. Thank you.
Thanks. So, yeah, there is ongoing surveys of both of these areas and obviously many other areas as part of both the center's trawl survey and I think the scallop dredge survey may overlap this area and then but I'm not totally sure about that. And then the Ecomon survey goes in there as well. We don't consider those kind of ongoing long-term resource surveys to be addressing the council's DHRA specific research objectives. They certainly would be supportive of those objectives, and they might be information that researchers would use and rely on in part as designing studies or kind of thinking about just the conditions in the DHRA generally, but we would consider them kind of outside of this flowchart. And we did in the regional office report, I think frames them that way, and the PDT report would frame them as not addressing these objectives specifically.
Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question for Mr. Petney. So if you took that designated habitat research area on George's Banks and took that name off it, it would revert back to a closed area? Is that what you were saying, or no? It would be open area at that point.
Yeah, thanks for the question. No, I was speaking about the Stellwagen area.
Oh, okay.
Which already has these sort of underlying closures layered on, you know, layered with the DHRA. The Georgia's DHRA would, I think, revert to an open area as Michelle described.
Yeah, so, okay, thank you for that. A couple of things. I'd like to agree with Eric Hansen, what he said about fishing not tearing up the bottom. We had the area east of the Western Gulf Main closed for 20-something years, and we opened up a little sliver on the eastern side of it. And for a while, we kept trying to go in there and there wouldn't be any fish there, you know? Nothing was around there. And as we kept going in and turning up the bottom, turning up the worms of food and stuff, the fish show up. And it's like our rolling closures have been over and over again. You know, those fish show up because we're making a disturbance and the worms are coming up and the feed's coming up. And that's why they're there, you know, because, I mean, a fish is either looking for food or a girlfriend or a boyfriend. That's what they do. That's all they do. And so I wanted to agree with that. So thank you.
Thank you for that, Mr. Alexander. I will go to Ms. Smith. I believe you have a couple of committee motions for us.
I certainly do. I will wait for those to pull up before I read. Motion number one, on behalf of the committee, that the council supports the Habitat Advisory Panel and staff recommendations for elements to include in the clam exemption program review, and that there be flexibility to include other information as time allows and to focus the analysis as needed.
Thank you for that. Does not need a second. I will go to the council. Seeing none, I will go to the public in the room on the motion on the board. Any folks online would like to comment on the motion that was on the board? No worries. Just one moment. There you go. Thank you. No worries. To the public in room, online, motion on the board. Seeing none, back to the council. Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion on the board? Any abstentions? Thank you for that. This motion will pass with full consensus. Ms. Smith?
And the next motion, on behalf of the committee, that the council requests administrative removal of the George's Bank dedicated habitat research area.
Again, does not need a second. I will go to the council. Mr. Lucy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've received some feedback, so maybe offering a little bit of different perspective than what we've been hearing. One of the comments I heard, this is a highly dynamic area, and maybe the habitat effects are less, but there are a lot of scientific questions that we need to answer about this. It's not just about turning the bottom and providing food. There's also other species that live in there. Let's say, for example, the tube worms and the use of, say, white hake juveniles. I think those are questions that may become more important in the future. You know, we've been looking at the white hake recruitment. When you have a place that's set aside for so long, that's kind of like a long-term investment, and we don't know all the questions we're going to want to ask of it. And so if we do open this up, and we have questions for that type of habitat, we're going to have to start the clock all over again. And I think there's that's a loss of potential future information. So I'm still thinking about this, but I'm not sure I can support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lucy. We'll give you a few moments to think about it. I will go to Mr. Smith.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman, and appreciate your comments on this bill. I'm going to support this motion, even though I don't want it to happen. I would like us to have a dedicated habitat research area on George's Bank and to have one in the Gulf of Maine because of the different environments and the different things that are going on in the two areas. I'd like to see the one on George's stay, but I feel like when this council established DHRAs. We created a pretty specific and deliberative process for reviewing them. And if they're being used, keep them in place. And if they're not being used, we should consider sunsetting them. This one out on George's Bank, we renewed it in 2022, even though there wasn't research going on out there then. There still isn't research going on there now. So as much as I'd like to see it stay, I feel like I need to be true to the process that this council set up. For those reasons, I'm going to be supporting this motion, even though I'm not going to like the outcome of it.
Thank you for that, Mr. Smith. Ms. O'Dell, and then Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the discussion about the area has been closed, and it would be good to have research conducted and, you know, have a designated habitat research area in an area that was already closed and had a head start was the discussion we had during OHA2. And, you know, there were a lot of comments from the industry at that point on, you know, how to handle designated habitat research area, and the council adopted criteria on questions and research and has the sunset provision if there's no research that's either been conducted or planning to be conducted. So although it may feel good just in case to have research, an area where research could be done, it hasn't been done. So I vote in support of this motion because it holds us to you know, kind of what the council had outlined in OHA2 to sunset it if there's no planned or future research. You know, that's the criteria we set up. So that's why I support this as well. I supported it at the committee, and I'm going to support it here today. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. O'Dell. Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I look at Stellwagen and I look at George's Bank, and I look at George's Bank as a different situation. And there's been a change in condition to George's Bank. We have a situation with herring where these are herring spawning grounds. That biomass is terribly low. We've had a change in the cod, spawning and what's taking place there in production and the biomass of that stock. We have, changes to the temperature and shifting stocks, so that this is, in my opinion, an example of changes that are yet to be determined what's the cause behind them. Mr. Lucy, you've convinced me, you and others have convinced me that I think it's important to keep it because of the status of all of these unknowns and the poor status of some of these stocks that I mentioned. So in this case, I would recommend that we keep the DHRA for George's Bank. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Mr. Pierdnock. Further to the council on the motion on the board. Seeing none, I will, Mr. Hansen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, we do have other closures. Habitat closures that aren't dedicated for habitat research, but they are closures. So research can be done in them, in those areas. I think we have the sunset clause when this was put in. I think we should live up to that. It doesn't qualify for continuing. So if there is research in the future, there are places to do it. So I think to have this closure, because it's there, isn't right. I think we should live up to the promises we made to the industry and sunset this if it's not doing what it was created to do. That's my opinion. I think this should, I support this motion.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. To the public in the room, Mr. Smolowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I support this motion, but for totally different reasons than have been discussed. I was the first chair of the Habitat Advisory Panel. Back in 2003, we were doing the first omnibus amendment, and the council could not reach agreement on closures. So we formed what was called the JAP, the Joint Advisory Panels, where the chair and co-chair of each advisory panel was a part of a committee, and we met for 2 days with the council asking us to identify habitat closures associated with the groundfish closures. And we're all fishing oriented. There were a few enviros on it, but most of the habitat closures were based on where fishing wasn't critical. And no one really cared about the southern part of closed area one. So it ended up being closed. I like the idea because one of the biggest problems we had with research is we didn't have control areas. And so the idea of keeping an area closed as a future, a control spot made sense. However, there's no funding for habitat research. The habitat research that has taken place in the last 30 years has been industry funded, whether RSA or what we're doing now with the EFP in the clam area. The research is being funded because there's an interest in the fishing industry to get into areas that are fishing grounds. So the DHRA approach does not work as a control. You go 10 kilometers north of this area or 10 kilometers to the west or the south, you're in totally different habitat. So it can't be used as a control for the impact, for an impact study in an open area where it's easier to get an impact study under a permit. So I think the council needs to define another methodology for looking at the impacts of fishing on habitat. And the example to me is the EFP in the clam area right now. The council said we're going to set aside research areas. They set aside an EFP process. It's paid for by the catch, and we're getting an amazing amount of data. The DHRA on Georges Bank, we went in there in 2015 and did a seeding experiment. But the scallops, about a million of them we put on the bottom, they survived quite well initially, and then they left the area. So it's not a good place to do a scallop seeding experiment. I would think that we would be able to do a real good habitat research program on a northern edge or in the HMA, again, but it has to be funded from the fishery. You're looking at fishery impacts, you allow a fishery to take place, you monitor it, and you determine the impacts of the fishery. The DHRA concept just does not work to do that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
One last comment about the EFH models. Just, I think without ground truthing them, they're useless. And I brought that up when they presented the results of the COD. Just look at the yellowtail map. There's no ground truth there. It's a model.
Thank you for your comments. Further in the room, Mr. Brogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. I'm a habitat advisor. I have just a couple of questions on this. Looking at this motion, the term administrative removal, and I don't know whether this is a question for council staff or for the agency. What does that look like? Is this a purely administrative thing that will go through with just a Federal Register notice? Will there be NEPA analysis, an EA, looking at what this means, what this is going to mean for the affected environment, for fixed gear fisheries, other things that are happening in that area, and just also the question of how this fits with adverse effects minimization. How does this fit in the portfolio of fishing effects minimization? Is this going to ultimately require an offset? So I don't know who can answer this, but I think it's important that term administrative removal carries a lot of weight, and I think the council needs to understand that.
Mr. Pentney.
Yes, I don't have a complete answer. We can certainly review this, but I think what the council is looking for, from my understanding, is the way the process was set up is council would request that I take action to remove or sunset the DHRA. The process to do that would be to look at the sort of originating action. as I understand it, the fishing effects analysis or minimizing to the extent practicable analysis did not include the DHRA as a basis for achieving that requirement of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. So that would be unaffected by removing the DHRA, as I understand it. And then I believe that the EIS underlying OHA 2 considered the sunset provision as part of the baseline analysis. And so we would rely on that analysis that was already done to determine the impacts, if any, of sunsetting the DHRA. So it would be a rulemaking action because there are regulations in place. But I believe the sort of analytical burden is reduced because of the way it was structured in the underlying OHA 2.
Okay, but there would be a rulemaking, and so this would not just be a notice from your office in your current view of this.
Yeah, Mitch may have an opinion on that. I mean, it's a rulemaking in the sense that there are regulations in place that would have to be removed.
That, okay.
Whether it's a full proposed rule, final rule, or some other type of regulatory FR action, I think is something we have to discuss with general counsel.
Okay. I'm just seeing this one is quite messy. Just one other thing. To the 2028 review of all things OHA 2, I know that you're not looking at priorities for 2028, but I think that this would be a more appropriate place to do this kind of a review of the DHRAs. But so you could look at it comprehensively with all of the other area management, look at the fixed gear fisheries and all of the effects. But thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Brogan. Any further comments from those in the room? I have two hands online. I will go to Attorney Minkiewicz.
Thank you, Drew Minkiewicz, SSF, and also a Habitat Advisor. This motion is about one thing. Is the council going to keep its word? When DHRAs were debated, there was a lot of concern in the public about them becoming continuous or quasi-permanent, another form of quasi-permanent closure. And the council said, no, we're putting these in place to encourage research. If research is occurring, they stay. If research doesn't occur, we will sunset them. Clear criteria were created in by the council and enacted. No one debates those criteria. And it is 100% clear that the criteria for sunset have been met. Not just the first go-round, but now the second go-round. So it's now it's time for the council to keep its word. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Minkiewicz. Attorney Eitri.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Libby Eitri, Conservation Law Foundation. We do not support this motion as written. We've been following the discussion about evaluating the Georges Bank DHRA, and we actually support the PDT recommendation for further analysis rather than sunsetting at this time. This area was identified in OHA 2 for its representation of sand and granule pebble dominant habitat on the bank. It's a high energy environment with low structural complexity in which recovery has been speculated to occur relatively quickly. There is nonetheless value in having such an environment closed to fishing and available for research, including as a comparison to other closed areas. As it's been noted, this area has been closed since the 90s. And while we do acknowledge no research has taken place since the implementation of OHA 2, the research benefits of maintaining a long-term closure to examine the impacts of fishing as a contrast to open areas are many, particularly in light of fast-changing conditions under climate change, including issues such as the change or stability in seafloor habitat, linkages between habitat and the productivity and food habitats as managed species, and the cascading influence of climate change on EFH and managed species. In contrast, the lost fishing opportunities are not clear. The PDT weighed in on this issue in their May 22nd memo, and they recommended retaining the DHRA pending further discussion of trade-offs between having a relatively undisturbed area in which to conduct dedicated research versus lost fishing opportunities. This discussion has not occurred. Instead, the arguments being made in support of sunsetting appear solely to be based on maintaining a process rather than rationally looking at the pros and cons of the trade-offs suggested by the PDT. As for some comments about other closed areas being available, if this area was open, we just would like to highlight that the PDT memo also stated that identifying and creating a new area with the analogous closed area conditions available in this DHRA would require several years of limited disturbance to have equal impact. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Itri. Any further public comment on the motion to the, on the board? Seeing none, back to the council. I will go with a show of hands. For those that are in favor for the motion on the board, please raise your hand and keep them up. Those opposed? Are there any abstentions? The motion will pass 12-4-1. Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one more motion. It is not on behalf of the committee, so I will need a second. Move that the council recommends retention of the Stellwagen dedicated habitat research area.
Mr. Popolari will second. Rationale?
Certainly. So in discussions that we've had both at the committee and also obviously at the AP and the PDT, there was a little bit of, I guess, hesitancy with the understanding that this area is a little bit more complicated than the Georges Bank because there is overlapping HMA layers involved. However, just especially with what Mr. Patney just said, having the DHRA overlay is beneficial to our academic and research environments because it does aid in approving an EFP for that dedicated research. I think something else that came out from the Habitat Committee that wasn't, maybe super clear going into that meeting was that each of these layers of habitat designations do have different objectives and different goals. And I think it's important to recognize that in an area such as Stellwagen that had previous research, that has ongoing research, and probably future research extending into the future, maintaining that sort of control of objectives, I think, is actually really important. And so with that, I do believe that we should retain the Stellwagen DHRA.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Anything to add, Mr. Popolari? Thank you. Comments to the motion on the board from the council? Seeing none. Comments from the public in the room on the motion on the board? Mr. Minkiewicz online.
Thank you, Drew Minkiewicz, SSF and Habitat Advisor. So I was the one who made the original motion asking the questions about whether or not the DHRA was necessary or contributing to the advance, you know, of science on Stellwagen. And I made it to spark discussion, and that discussion has now happened, and I want to thank the regional administrator for his clarifying comments today. And I think it's been a benefit that now we fully understand what is and is not necessary and how this is playing a role in the overall suite of closures. And so I do support this motion because the discussion has happened. We all have a better understanding, and it's not just an unnecessary layer, but it does appear from the comments of the regional administrator to play a role in how they're able to approve different projects and move forward. And I would just ask that as projects are considered and approved or disapproved moving forward, that there is a uniformity and clarity in the rationale because that has been lacking in the past. That's one of the reasons I asked the question. And so just to be very clear about what role all these areas are playing in those projects. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Any further public comment on the motion on the board? Back to the council, Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm gonna be supporting this motion, and thank you, John and Melissa, for bringing this bringing this to our attention. I had supported the motion for the dependence review just because I thought this discussion would be very important, because Stellwagen is so different from the George's closure designated habitat research area, and also because there are those overlaying management habitat groundfish regulations that are within that area. So having this discussion, I thought, was very important and valuable for our knowledge for the future. So I'm going to be supporting this. Also, you know, this is an area that has, you know, as related to OHA2 guidelines, research has been done, there's research being done, and there's research that's planning to be done in this area. So it's very different than George's. So I support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Dell. Any further comments from the council? Seeing none, I'm going to go. Is there any opposition to the motion on the board? Any abstentions? The motion will pass with consensus with one abstention from the regional administrator. Ms. Smith.
That concludes the habitat report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, and thank you to staff for the presentation.